All right, ready to dive into another fascinating case. Today, we're going deep on a Texas Court of Criminal Appeals decision. TJ Jones v. the state of Texas.
Ooh, this one is a good one. It really gets at how we figure out intent in the legal system, especially when there's a deadly weapon involved.
Yeah, and Jones gives us a real-life scenario to unpack that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so picture this. 1981, a man named TJ Jones is convicted of capital murder for killing an elderly man during a robbery.
Tragic situation.
And here's the thing. The victim was shot right between the eyes, and Jones is caught with the murder weapon.
Wow, so that's pretty damning evidence right there.
It is. But Jones claims he didn't mean to kill the man. He just wanted to scare him.
So how do we reconcile that? How does the court make sense of his actions versus his words?
Well, that is the heart of this deep dive. How did the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals ultimately uphold the capital murder conviction, even with Jones's claim?
That's a great question, and I think to answer it, we need to understand the evidence the court considered, the reasoning they used.
Let's do it. Let's start with the basics, the crime itself.
Sure.
We have a 75-year-old victim, Mr. Hammonds, killed by a single gunshot right between the eyes.
Oof.
His car was stolen, and Jones was arrested soon after with the gun that was used in the crime. And we know from the case files, this wasn't a gun that could just go off accidentally.
No, it had to be intentionally fired.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then we have Jones's statement where he admits to the robbery, but insists he only wanted to scare the victim, not kill him.
Okay, so there's this discrepancy between what happened and what he says he meant to do.
Right, and that brings us to a really tricky part of criminal law, proving intent. How can you ever really know what someone was thinking when they did something?
It is a tough one. Unless you've got a confession straight up saying, I meant to do it, courts have to look at other clues to try and figure out intent.
So what kind of clues are we talking about?
Well, they have to infer intent from the actions of the accused, the circumstances, and the logical consequences of what they did. And when a deadly weapon is used, Texas law, like many other places, allows for an interesting assumption. They can infer intent to kill or seriously hurt someone if a deadly weapon is used in a deadly way.
I see. So in this case, the fact that Jones used a gun and shot Mr. Hammonds in such a lethal manner, the assumption is he meant to kill him.
Right. The law kind of acknowledges that when you use a gun, there's a strong possibility of death or serious injury. But it's not an automatic conclusion. If there's other evidence that shows a different intent, that can change things.
But in Jones, there wasn't, right? I mean, think about it. If someone points a loaded gun at you and pulls the trigger, what would you think their intent was?
Definitely not to give me a hug.
Exactly. So the jury in Jones's trial considered all of this, the evidence, his statement, the legal principles about inferring intent, and found him guilty of capital murder. Now, why is the jury's decision so important when a case goes to appeal?
Because in our legal system, we put a lot of trust in the jury. These folks, they hear everything. They see the witnesses, they look at the evidence directly, and they get to judge how believable the witnesses are.
Right, and that's something an appeals court can't really do, right? They just have the written record.
Exactly. So appellate courts give a lot of weight to the jury's findings. They're not usually going to just redo the whole trial and come up with a different verdict unless there's a really obvious mistake with the law or no reasonable jury could have reached that decision based on what was presented.
So let's get to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals reasoning in Jones. Why did they ultimately uphold the guilty verdict, even though Jones said he didn't mean to kill Mr. Hammonds?
Well, they focused on two main points. First, as we've discussed, the gun itself required an intentional trigger pull. So an accident was basically ruled out.
Makes sense.
But the second point that was really key for them, how the gun was used. Shooting someone point blank between the eyes, that's not something you do to just scare someone.
It does seem like that action speaks for itself, doesn't it?
It does. The court said that even though Jones claimed a different intent later, the act of shooting the victim in such a deadly way pretty much proved what he intended at the time.
No, I know the appeal didn't just focus on intent. Jones's lawyers brought up other legal arguments, too.
Yes, they did.
Like, they alleged there were Brady violations. Can you explain what that means in simple terms?
Sure. Basically, it means the prosecution has to share any evidence they have that could help the defendant. It's about making sure the defense has a fair chance.
So did the court find any Brady violations in Jones?
They looked at everything carefully, but concluded that even if some evidence wasn't shared properly, it wouldn't have changed the outcome of the trial.
Okay, so no game changer there. And what about the allegations of judicial misconduct?
The court examined those allegations too, but they found no real evidence to back them up.
Got it. And there was also the issue of excluded third-party confessions.
Yes. The defense tried to bring in evidence suggesting others might have confessed to the murder.
So why didn't that work?
Well, the court said those confessions weren't reliable enough. And they didn't directly clear Jones. They didn't meet the legal standards for admissibility.
So none of these other legal arguments were enough to overturn the conviction.
Right.
But there was a concurring opinion from Justice McCormick that added an interesting layer to this, right?
Yes. He agreed with the guilty verdict, but he pointed out something important. He was concerned that the trial court didn't give the jury specific instructions about how to handle potentially prejudicial evidence, specifically some gang photos of Jones.
Oh, interesting. So he thought those photos could have swayed the jury unfairly.
Exactly. Even though he felt the evidence of guilt was strong, he wanted to make sure the jury wasn't influenced by something unrelated to the crime itself.
It's like he was saying, even if the outcome seems clear, we still have to make sure the process was fair.
That's a great way to put it.
So zooming out, what does Jones v. State tell us about how our legal system works in cases like this?
Well, it really shows two big things. First, appellate courts trust the jury's judgment, especially when it comes to facts. They're not going to change a verdict unless there's a good reason.
And second?
Second, it confirms that using a deadly weapon, particularly in a lethal way, creates a strong assumption of intent to kill.
Earlier you mentioned legal sufficiency and factual sufficiency. Could you explain that again?
Of course. Legal sufficiency basically asks, is there any evidence at all to support the verdict? Factual sufficiency is more demanding. It asks, does the overall weight of the evidence really point towards this verdict, or is it more likely something else? Imagine you have a tiny crumb of evidence versus a whole loaf of bread. That's the difference.
That's a great analogy. So what can law students learn from Jones? Any advice for future lawyers?
I think the biggest lesson for defense lawyers is to fight hard against evidence and object early in the trial. If you don't, it's much harder to argue about it later. For prosecutors, the case shows how powerful that inference of intent from using a deadly weapon can be. But it also reminds them to play fair and share any evidence that might help the defendant.
It's all about balance, isn't it? Ensuring fairness while respecting the jury's role and the finality of the legal process.
You got it.
So, to sum up, in T.J. Jones v. the State of Texas, the court found enough evidence to conclude that Jones intended to kill Mr. Hammonds, even though he claimed otherwise. They relied heavily on the fact that he used a deadly weapon in a deadly way, shooting the victim between the eyes. The court basically decided that his actions spoke louder than his words.
And they also emphasized that appeals courts will rarely overturn a jury's verdict unless there are serious problems with how the trial was conducted.
Now, here's something for you all to think about. Does Jones v. State get that balance right between respecting the jury and making sure we accurately determine someone's intent?
What are the potential issues with relying so much on the idea that using a deadly weapon automatically means you intended to kill? Are there situations where that might not be true?
It's a complex question that really gets at the heart of criminal law. So keep exploring these ideas, intent, jury, deference, appellate review, as you continue your legal journey.
And keep those critical thinking skills sharp.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into T.J. Jones v. the State of Texas. Until next time, keep learning and stay curious.
See you next time.